Been talking about leadership, issues of leadership the last few weeks in my worship service. Last week in my sermon, I quoted James Kubal Komodo, who is currently serving as our regional lead for the Unitarian Universalist Association Pacific Western Region. Reverend Kubal Komodo had written an article at the beginning of this month for the regional newsletter that I found helpful in talking last week about the issue of leadership during changing times. One paragraph of Reverend Kubal Komodo's newsletter article also makes a good introduction to the leadership theme I want to look at this week. Reverend Kubal Komodo wrote this: "If the individuals we prefer are elected, our task is not to throw up our hands in joy and say, 'Thank goodness for that,' and then return to the quotidian rhythms of our everyday lives. Our task is to continue the hard, slow, onerous work of creating a more compassionate, just, and sustainable world for us all." Reverend Kubal Komodo was writing his newsletter article just before the November 6 elections, before we knew whether the candidates we preferred and the issues we supported would prevail in the voting. But rather than say that we should cheer if the election goes our way and weep if it goes against us, what he said is that our response should be the same. Whichever way the election went, our task is to continue the hard, slow, onerous work of creating a more compassionate, just, and sustainable world for us all. If the results of an election go against us, our work gets more difficult, but we wouldn't give up. We would analyze the new political environment, we would identify new allies, and then adapt our strategy. Our work might shift, but it is the same work toward the same goal. And if we win the result that we hope for in a single election, it's probably not true that our work is over. We get some new energy, we make some progress, but the large goal that draws us forward is still likely some distance away. Even if the immediate goal is won, well, we simply set up the next step and then we keep working, right? Oprah Winfrey once asked, "What do you do when you achieve your dreams?" And she answered herself, "You dream bigger dreams." Underneath the work of one election or a single piece of policy, voted up or down, underneath the narrow context of any particular issue or work of the day, there needs to run always this larger and deeper goal that we're pursuing, the kind of big purpose that gives shape not just to our days, but to our lives. The kind of theme that shows up in our lives again and again, sometimes only by hindsight, when we say, "Oh, I see now what my life was for, what fed me and carried me through all the shifting circumstances of my years." The kind of deep purpose where you can understand not just what you did for a living, but what you were living for. Spiritual health comes from connecting with that deep, meaningful purpose of our lives. In a church, that kind of purpose might be an inspiring mission statement. In Reverend Kubal Komodo's newsletter article, he describes a generic Unitarian Universalist purpose as creating a more compassionate, just, and sustainable world for us all. A purpose needn't be an accomplishment exactly, like a goal you achieve, but it could be more like a common thread, a recurring theme, the stable center that your life revolves around, your meaning-given giving center, the place where your heart lies, the place where your spirit lives. We had a memorial service for a church member, Dorothy Geisler, here a week ago last Saturday, and several such themes of her life came up during that service, as they often do during a memorial service. For her, some of the themes I heard in her life were connection with nature, service to others, conservation, recycling, and living lightly on the planet. Those were the kinds of purposes of her life. For you, your larger theme might be something like making beauty, creativity, art. Your theme might be advancing wisdom, learning, and knowledge. Your theme might be collecting deep and rich life experiences. Your theme might be creating a strong community, putting people together and building friendships. Your theme might be nurturing children or empowering women or working for equal rights for all or for animal welfare. Your theme might be care for a particular beloved place on the planet. Or your theme might be service to some particular goal, or it might be the theme of service itself. For the past several weeks now, and continuing until April, our Leadership Development Committee has been shepherding a group of church leaders through a program developed by the Unitarian Universalist Association called Harvest the Power. It's a curriculum that's designed to help potential church leaders to recognize their gifts and identify where they might be called to serve. This year's class, we're working with current and past leaders, and when we offer the course again in future years, we'll seek to work with potential future leaders. What I love about the design of this curriculum is that it's a leadership class that doesn't start with skill building. In fact, there's very little in the curriculum that has to do with any of the practical side of the work of a leader. So we don't talk about agendas, or how to read budgets, or Robert's Rules of Order. Instead, the Harvest the Power curriculum recognizes that healthy, graceful leadership comes from connecting the sources of passion and joy within the self out to the kinds of deep purposes in the world that I've been talking about. So leadership is not about running a meeting. It's about remembering what the meetings are about. You lead not from a rule book, but from your life. And you lead not by moving down the agenda and keeping your eye on the clock, but by expressing who you are through service to a deep purpose beyond yourself. I live in downtown Los Angeles, which is about a half an hour drive from the church. So I've gotten very familiar with the GPS direction app on my phone over the year I've been with you. From where I live to the church, it's a little bit more than a half hour drive, and there are three routes that I can take that are each about exactly the same distance. I can take the, as Californians say, the 110 to the 405, or I can take the 710 to the 405, or I can take the 5 to the 605. So if there's traffic or road construction on one freeway, it's usually not hard to find an alternate. My phone has, amazingly, all of the real-time data it needs. So I get in the car, I say, "Hey Siri," and it says, "What can I do for you?" I tell Siri, "Take me to work," and it says, "Sometimes the 110, sometimes the 710, sometimes the 605. I don't get in the car, just start driving randomly, because it's not about being in the car and driving, it's about getting to work. I have a purpose. But how I get to work doesn't really matter that much. So whatever particular conditions of the road that morning, I adjust, or rather Siri adjusts for me. So if there's road work on the 110, on the 710, I don't stubbornly just sit there in the backup because that's the way I always go. It's not the 710 that matters, it's the goal. So how about the 110 today? Or what's the traffic like on the 605? On Thursday, I got off the freeway at Atlantic Boulevard and I drove through Vernon because my iPhone told me that would be the quickest way to my goal. So what's the reason that I'm getting in my car? Where am I trying to go? The frame of the Harvest the Power curriculum is that leadership in a church isn't just about filling slots. It's about knowing that there's some big purpose in a church's mission, like creating a just, compassionate, and sustainable world for us all, a place for us to go. and that people have big themes in their lives that they want to express through their work in a church, like advancing beauty or wisdom or joy or community building or love, and then fitting those two elements together to the benefit of both the church and the individual leader. Another one of my favorite quotes is from the Presbyterian minister Frederick Buechner. He writes, "The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." Isn't that nice? Buechner is talking about vocation, which comes from the Latin word vocare, meaning to call. So what are you called to do? Well, probably there are a lot of voices calling on you constantly to do a lot of things. How do you know then which voice to respond to? The loud voice of the person who's standing in front of you, or the maybe quiet but important voice at the back of the room? What do you do? How do you avoid taking on tasks that will wear you down and waste your precious life? Because the work of the world is endless, and you can probably do a lot of things fairly successfully. So how do you know what's your work to do? Reverend Buechner's fuller answer is this. By and large, a good rule for finding out is this. The kind of work God usually calls you to is the kind of work, A, that you need most to do, and B, that the world most needs to have done. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Deep gladness and deep hunger. What is your deep gladness? Deep gladness is more than what makes you happy. If you're lucky, there are a lot of experiences in life that will make you happy. But where do you find your deep gladness? Deep gladness probably doesn't mean being entertained. It doesn't mean distracting yourself with fun. Because deep gladness is actually the opposite of distraction. Deep gladness is being fully integrated with the moment, a breathtaking and consuming connection to reality. Not a nice way to spend an afternoon, but a way that you could spend your life. Deep gladness isn't about happiness. It's really about joy. Happiness being that external and fleeting expression, and joy being that internal and lasting state of being. Joy doesn't mean very happy. Joy means that sense of being completely engaged with that source of beauty, wisdom, experience, relationship, whatever the theme of life is for you. Joy means full of life. Joy means merging with reality. Joy is the feeling that's called ecstasy in the spiritual sense, that experience of being lifted out of yourself and into communion with being itself. That's deep gladness. If you can identify what the source of that deep gladness is for you and connect to it, then you have a direction for your life better than any GPS can give. If you can connect through your work to even a portion of that depth, even to a hint of what that greater, bigger, deeper purpose is, then you have a sure and accurate guide for how to move through the shifting tasks and demands of the day. It is the strategy of the Harvest the Power curriculum to help folks discover that source of deep gladness for themselves by connecting with their story, their experiences, the places where they've found insight and meaning and purpose. And then, as a group, we do work together to identify the deep hunger of the world that's expressed through the theological tradition of Unitarian Universalism and the mission of this church. A just and compassionate and sustainable world. That sounds like a deep hunger that a lot of us could relate to. And then, finally, to discover whether between the deep gladness of each class participant and the deep hunger of the church's needs, there is a good fit. There wouldn't always be a fit, because not everyone is called to leadership in a church. And perhaps some people are called to leadership on the board or the search committee, and some are called to leadership in other ways. But wouldn't it be nice to have a set of leaders in our church like that? Wouldn't it be nice to have leaders that serve both the deep hunger of the church and also serve their own deep gladness? And wouldn't it be nice to have leaders like that that arrive not just because we got lucky and they happened to show up when we needed them, but because we were diligent about identifying, nurturing, and supporting them? But here, though, is the challenge of following leaders like those. And perhaps I've left this for the end of the sermon because it's the hardest part of my message for the morning, so I hope you'll hear it and meditate on this through the next week. Leaders that are grounded in and guided by deep purpose may not be so obviously motivated to meet your individual need. The kinds of leaders that our churches need are those who are committed to serving the deep hunger of the faith and the congregation as a whole. That means in order to get what the church needs, you may not every time get what you individually want. In truth, though, in a healthy church system, the church's needs and any individual member's needs shouldn't actually be at odds, because every member is a member of the whole. We individually are the church communally. Our institutional health is bound up in our personal health. A strong church makes you strong. A healthy church contributes to your health. That's why you're here, and that's why you're willing to sacrifice for the church in your volunteer work and in your pledging, and also in sometimes being willing to put aside your personal needs because you recognize the good of the whole. Of course, leaders are human, and sometimes, like all of us, they are victim to personal failings or just plain mistake-making, like we all do. So what we need to ask of our leaders and help them to be better at is to discern those times when what is best for the church and even what is best for the member of the church standing right in front of them might not be what that church member is actually asking for, even when that church member is you. And then the challenge for that leader, which we must empower them to face, is to recognize those times when, in order to satisfy the deep hunger of the church I'm called to serve, I need to dissatisfy this person in front of me. That's hard to do. And you know it's hard for leaders to, as well as for the individual being disappointed. I had a friend who described this challenge of leadership as the difference between serving and pleasing. My friend owned a graphic design business, and when he got a new project, he always began the work by asking the client what they were trying to achieve with this particular design project that they had hired him for. What is this logo supposed to accomplish? What is this website trying to communicate? What's the large purpose you've hired me for? And my friend realized that it was his job to help their client achieve that purpose. Sometimes what would please the client would be to make it green, or use a particular font, or make it cheap. But what would serve the client in realizing their purpose might be something totally different. And my friend saw his job as serving, not pleasing. Now, of course, if you never please your clients, you won't be in business very long. So there's a certain amount of negotiation and compromise always necessary. But if the client walks away with a design piece that they like, but a design piece that doesn't actually work to achieve their goal, then you wouldn't be in business very long either. Pleasing is easier because it keeps people happy, at least in the short term. But in the long term, we want leaders who serve the larger vision. We want leaders able to stay focused on the larger purpose that is the reason that the church exists, that the church has worth, and that we're all here and in love with it. The leader's task is to serve a deep purpose guided by true principles, regardless of the outcome of that day's elections, or whether that means today taking the 7-10 or the 1-10 or the 5. To support the community, not by trying to lift up every individual one by one, but by supporting the principles and the purposes that collectively support the whole community. And the leader's task is to inspire in all of us, the people that they serve, that same connection to those deep principles and purposes, to create allies in this one great cause, all of us willing to see past personal preferences to the good of the whole. Fly, bird of hope, and shine, light of love. Lift our gaze toward distant view. Light, shine in, shine bright and true, so we may join our songs in new sounds that become full symphonies.